you have with you tonight?
As a special guest of honor, Captain Frank DeWolf of the U.S. Army, who was wounded at Fort Donelson in 1862. Now, you think I'm talking about a past death. I'm not. I'm talking about a sympathy facsimile picked up. I was about a year and a half old, evidently, on the death of my great-grandfather. And that is... So, some of his ghost is hanging around here on this service facsimile. I almost killed myself. I start running out a lot of emotional curves, and life begins to look more and more interesting, and then I get up out of the chair, and I can't get up out of the chair. I wondered what this was all about, and I began to run some more emotional curves, and then I suddenly recalled that my great-grandfather had a cane, a black cane with a solid gold dog's head. Great little gimmick, the solid gold dog's head. The facsimile, which I had just finished running out, was the facsimile of the death of my dog when I was 14, which tied in to the cane with the dog's head, which was the death of my great-grandfather, which occurred while I was still sick with pneumonia when I was a year and a quarter old. That's very interesting that you can get such tie-ins. Of course, you know that you can have a service facsimile for practically anything under the sun that has happened to you. You undoubtedly have engrams and counter-efforts that have to do with being walked over with elephants and smashed and being caught in riots of the Republicans trying to elect Abraham Lincoln or something. In fact, as was not suspected at the beginning of Dianetics, you have an enormous number of these things. So you can always tailor one up to match your circumstances. You always do that. Well, anyway, that's just as a matter of preamble here. I wouldn't want you to think that I was getting worse. I'm not, as a matter of fact, getting worse. The point is that I never knew this, but my legs from the waist down have evidently been out of balance most of my life. life is very interesting. I have no very set package to talk to you about tonight, nothing very startling. That is not startling in Dianetics, I can see. I can see the hair stand up on half of the people in the field of the mind, and with 1/100th of the data which we've had here in the last couple of weeks, with its proofs, these people would just walk down to an insane asylum and turn themselves in, possibly even out of remorse. Yes, that's a funny thing. Very funny. Well, tonight I want to talk to you about a very, very romantic, mean-sounding subject, dead men's goals. Something that when I was just out of college and scrambling around might have written for Adventure magazine. Dead man's goals. There isn't a person here tonight who isn't living forward in his time continuum on ambitions he does not want, does not need, and cannot fulfill, simply because he is finishing off the life of a dead man. Grim little subject, isn't it? I ran into this mechanism in July of 1950 head on. in the study of what we called coffin cases. Many a preacher would lie down on the couch and cross his arms like this, and you'd say, all right, now let's run through this time when you're very excited. Okay. This person was lying in a coffin, obviously. Some person maybe 26, 27 years of age would look like somebody 40, 50, 60. Fascinating. Why? What was the survival advantage of being dead? Well, I asked a lot of questions of myself, and as a matter of fact, through asking these questions, ran into past deaths, somewhat on the order of a freight train going down the track, minding its own business, and all of a sudden finds itself, instead of being in Iowa, being in the Belgian Congo, and that it is actually a circus wagon. That my perplexity would be the perplexity of an engineer who ran into that sort of a situation, because that's practically, precisely what happened. Here, I suppose my great-grandfather had coal, too. Anyway, he did. He had cancer of the throat. Anyway, the theory I started working on, simply this. A child or a human being standing around a stiff, you'll forgive that use of that word, I know the dead are holy, and that one must never speak evil of the dead, the dogs. And I know a lot of these other things, but as I say, a person, little kid standing around this stiff, and everybody comes in and they look at the coffin, they look upon the painted face of the corpse. Poor Aunt Bessie. She was really a good woman. 3 days before her death, they were saying, Aunt Bessie, a disgrace to the family. Do you know that she once accepted a diamond ring? And my dear, you know, this was Aunt Bessie just before she kicked off. But here is Aunt Bessie lying here in the coffin. Everybody says, God bless her. I hope she goes on to the great beyond and gets her just reward. She was a noble woman. She was a good woman. Little kid hears this, flap, flap. He said, how do I get sympathy? How do I get sympathy? Well, that's easy. And is thereafter Aunt Bessie. Maybe this is the way it works. I never had a chance to find out if this was the way it worked. In order to make a test run, then you would say to the individual, go back to the time you died. Naturally, he'd find himself in the coffin with Aunt Bessie, I'd say to myself. See, that's a simple way to test it. He says, I hate to tell you this, but there's a boa constrictor chasing me. So, well, wonderful, wonderful. Hallucination is just wonderful. Well, come back to present time. So he says, all right, in sort of the dazed tone of voice, and gets up off the couch and... Nobody can run him. His case is stopped. Right there, stopped. For this, he ran easily on the track. But you say, oh, well, it was shock to him. He's suddenly become a dub in case. Next case. All right. We're going to find Aunt Bessie this time. So you say, all right, go back to the last time you died. Fellow says, oh! You say, what's the matter? A horse just stepped on my face. Well, where are you? Let me think for a minute. It's the Battle of Antietam. You say, well, obviously it's hallucination. Come up to present time. This case wouldn't run either. But That's beside the point. In research, you want to find things out, not make people well. So, next case.
Go back to the last guy who died.
Oh! What's the matter with you? A Maasai has just run me through with a Nasigi. 3 minutes before, this person hadn't known a Maasai from Pepsi Cola. Well, it became a problem after I'd loused up 10, 12 cases. Realized that we were running into the laws of engrams. Now, you know, there's the law of engram, the laws of delusion. Maybe somebody's wondered why we ever got those psychogalvanometers downstairs there. But there's a good reason on that. One of these days, we're going to run somebody through an engram, and then we're going to get a dub in and register it on the psychogalvanometer to see how excited the person gets and so forth. And then we'd be able to read it by meters, and it'll all be on meters, and it will say, well, there is actuality on the recall of pain, and there is a certain set of laws that delusion run on, too. And you have to have a meter in order to convince psychiatry of anything, because, you see, you'd have a pretty hard time trying to convince them of any reality on anything, particularly themselves. Anyway, the next point. These psychogalvanometers, I said, well, we're going to work something like that. As a matter of fact, we rigged one. Interesting gimmick. Person would run into one of these deaths, and the needle would go wham. He'd run into birth, wham. He'd run into the last time that somebody knifed him for sleeping with the wrong woman, wham. He runs into delusion, wham. Another delusion. So you say, well, that's very easy. We run him into some delusory experiences like these past deaths and so on. Wham! Just like that. Well, he had to go back. I didn't catch up with four or five of these cases. One was in the foundation the other day. I didn't tell him so, but his case hasn't run since. We didn't catch up with three or four of these cases, but we got the rest of them that I'd run back into these deaths and ran off the death. Ran it off, reduced. It reduced like an engram. After I'd made this interesting experiment. A fella got in one of these past deaths. He was at sea. He was dying on shipboard. The whole ship was coming to pieces. The spars were all falling down. He got his foot caught in a bit alongside the deck house, and he couldn't get off with the rest of the sailors, and there he was, and he was busy drowning and objecting to it. Wouldn't reduce. So I ran it. Wouldn't reduce. So I says, go to the depth necessary to resolve this case. Not knowing a person would ever have any more than one of these things kicking around, see. The fellow goes back, zong, hits another instance where his shipmates were so glad to get rid of him they wouldn't throw him a box. And I think it was back in Phoenicia or someplace. And he drowned in that incident. We ran that incident. And then the later one reduced. This is very, very interesting. I wonder if they'll reduce any faster than that. Go to the death necessary to resolve the case. Bang. He ran it. He was never the same man afterwards. He was in good condition. He spoke to people when they spoke to him. He was the normalest man around the foundation. Well, gave one a little bit of pause. Here was phenomena, obvious phenomena. You could take people. Sometimes somebody would be very skeptical. With old techniques, you couldn't run him into one of these things unless he was willing to move on the track. And, however, with effort processing, it's not necessary to have anybody's permission to go into any such an incident. You just say, now, what is the effort? What is the effort to keep your blood circulating? That's a good one. And all of a sudden, the guy is going, rawr! Where are you? What are you doing? Very mystified about the whole thing. I'm dying! What do you suppose? I was very skeptical a few minutes ago. Sometimes the first somatic that you will ever be able to get on in a case is just by picking a random psychosomatic and asking the effort and counter effort with regard to it, and you'll find this person is dancing on the side of a cliff to an ode to the moon or something of the sort, and at this point the ground slides away and they get killed. And they get a somatic for the first time. The case runs well afterwards if you run out the past death. You desensitize the data in one of those lifetimes merely by running the death of it. Well, why is this? I didn't realize this until a very short time ago. It's regret. A person always regrets dying. I regret dying, don't you? It isn't very important anymore. But it is something that one normally regrets. He still had a bunch of coupons from the Safeway or something. He didn't catch it. So he has this regret. If you were to take a case and just take out all the regret off the whole track from Algy to Kansan, the whole track, regret, 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 you'll start blowing grief charges all over the track. You'll find something very interesting, that this individual's occlusion on his past deaths resolved. Now, I've made one test on this, which was particularly peculiar, but there were some have followed into this. They start working self-analysis, and they start straight wiring too far back. And they say, go to a time somebody left. Oh, it says, do you remember a time you were glad to say goodbye to somebody? Fellows. Must be a movie I saw. Girl standing on this balustrade. Seems kind of real. Name's Isabel. Yeah, her name's Isabel. Yeah. Boy, I was sure glad to get rid of. Where am I? In other words, these death experiences contain an enormous amount of regret, and a death is an invalidation of having lived. You see, the life was not successful because the person died out of it, so he just says, well, the whole life isn't successful, and he just moves all the data aside. Well, where does your natural-born Nimrod suddenly start to... He walks out the BB gun when he's 10 years of age and starts knocking all the sparrows off the telephone wire, and 12 years of age, he wins a couple of trap shoots, and then he starts firing with mirrors and over this way and so forth. He can't miss targets. How'd he get that? Well, it's talent. Talent, of course. Might be an awful lot of training, too. It might be a great many generations of training. Maybe he was a dub at shooting 8 generations ago. But he improved. He probably made a postulate to himself when he was lying there behind this barricade, stuffing the powder and ball into this thing and saying, "Foul, missed again. They're going to get me in about 2 minutes, but I'll see if I can get another one. Missed again. You know, I've got to learn how to shoot." So he sort of picks the tomahawk out of his skull and goes to his great reward, which is birth. Well, you know, I wouldn't be able to talk to you like this unless it were so easily demonstrable. Here's phenomena, and you can keep reproducing this phenomena just endlessly. For a while, I began to worry whether or not a person wasn't just picking deaths out of some place or other. If they were his own line continuum, well, they evidently are his own line continuum. There is this line that you call a theta body. That is to say, it's just the collected memories of one individual and his individuation. And this goes along all by itself. Conception, birth, growth, momentary pausing and doing something, decay, death, conception, birth, growth, off on the plane, and out we go again, conception, you know, cycle. Then there's this unending line of protoplasm. Here's this beta body line. Here's this unending line of protoplasm. 21, indiscretion. Another line. 21, indiscretion. Another line. 21, indiscretion. Another line. They got married. In other words, that is the protoplasmic line. Now, it follows the generation of parents, children, and then children, more children, children, more children, children, so on down the line. And that is what gives you your structural line. But that structural line is enormously modified by this theta line. Now, how this theta line ties in here and where it chooses up, that's kind of beside the point. But the funny part of it is that the body itself, having once been endowed with life, hangs on to it to some degree, so there's a third line. After death, you sometimes find a person kicking around in a coffin or any skeleton for a while. You very often get some little kid. He has terrific nightmares about skeletons and coffins, and he reads Edgar Allan Poe, reads some of the stories I used to write. And he gets horrors about these things. And you start processing this individual. I ran into this very early in the game of investigation to this life continuum. Fascinating. Said to this fellow, now what are you doing? Well, I'm lying here in the farmhouse. I'm dying. Well, all right, let's go to the moment you die. Okay. All right, now let's go to the moment you take off. I don't. Well, what happens to you? Well, they put me in a box and they bury me. Well, where are you now? Well, fingernails seem to still be growing. Well, where are you now? Well, I kind of decayed. Well, where are you now? Well, my chest bones just caved in. Where are you now? Well, I'm sort of just dust, I guess. Nothing much else. Are you out of there yet? No, I will be another 50 years or so. You say, well, go to the time you got out of there. He does. You get off on this track. Now you say, now let's go back to the death, and let's get the time when you take off. All right, he runs through this physical body continuum. In other words, a little bit of theta hanging around with the physical body for a while, and then he comes back to the moment he died, and then you get this thing that you normally get with almost everybody when you run a past death. They don't realize that it's so standard. What you want to do is get some fresh meat. This doesn't know anything about this at all. You find that the same phenomena repeats itself consistently. So here he dies, and next thing you know, he's way up here someplace looking down, saying, so what? And you say, well, let's go back to the moment you start to die. And the person, oh, weep, boo, how can I leave them, regret, so on, yak, yak. Then he's up there looking, he says, so what? Definite tone change. There's a lot of people who have been hung up in one of those so whats, I know. I used to think when I was a young writer that nearly all editors were. But here we have your three lines of continuum. Now, you'll find the genetic line can be recovered. You can send somebody back down his family line or his genetic line and so on. But it's not an individual line. You don't get individuality this way. You get bodies. And the guy gets pretty confused. Pretty confused. Because the theta line is where he's actually trapped, evidently. This theta line, oh, you would suffer to see how some of the boys, particularly those with an engineering background, went into action on the lines of How do you get an individual back from the death to the moment of the continuance of the protoplasm? That is to say,
how do we get this individual coming up here and dies? And then he comes back here and keeps on being himself as his protoplasm line.
And you'd say, Darwin and the rest of them introduced an arbitrary a long time ago that they didn't know any more about than you do when they said this unending line of protoplasm. Of course, this has worked out very well in the field of cytology. It doesn't happen to be very well accepted in the field of biology. But that's an arbitrary. Why do you keep working it that way? Well, it's impossible for a person who is dead to procreate. You say, why does it have to be on a genetic line? Then you suddenly realize what these boys are doing. They're following out the theory that all is matter. There is nothing but a material universe. There is only energy, space, time. That's all. That's a very narrow-sighted sort of a view, isn't it? I'd hate to work a problem after somebody had put down in front of me all the factors I need to resolve it but 50%. And they say, now you've got to solve this problem, but you can only solve it with these 50% factors. We had to go out into some very interesting mathematical lineups in Dianetics in order to get anything. And for instance, it's evident I've been very interested in getting a hold of a book on quantum mechanics. I want to convert all the infinities to zero and all the zeros to infinity on it and see if it won't work for a change. Quantum mechanics doesn't work. Because in Dianetics, quite as a byproduct, we have proven that zero equals infinity, not zero equals one over infinity. You wouldn't care too much, most of you, about that. And let me tell you that there are individuals in colleges whose whole lives are spent in this, the bloody battleground of whether or not the square root of one is or isn't. Well, this theta line is a very simple line. Evidently, the fellow merely goes on living and he kicks off and he goes on living some more and kicks off and goes on living some more. It seems it's awful simple. And his theta line, however, gets very, very badly messed up because he is busy regretting his dying. He thinks it's important. I passed the funeral. I hadn't really realized it integrated. It was all theoretical as far as I was concerned, observed phenomena and so on. I hadn't realized in any attitude of my own living that anything had changed. So one day I was driving down Central and a cop comes tearing up with a big motorcycle with a red lights on it flashing and so on. Pull over the curb. Sure, I'll pull over the curb. Funeral. Here's big hearse. Silver handles on a coffin. Cars, 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 cars. Suddenly occurred to me that a Dianetic auditor could set up shop out at the cemetery. He could do a hot business. Just blowing grief charges. Blowing off the debt. $10, lady, blow your grief off. Next thought occurred to me is, boy, are those people being fooled? Are they being fooled about this whole thing? They're talking about this individual going to the great beyond, his great reward, or probably they look at it as finality. This is the end. I thought, well, 2 or 3 years from now, someplace around Wichita, there'll be a little brat that's kicking people in the shins and so forth. Everybody will shove it him in the face. And he is Joe Glutz, the great banker. By the time the second policeman, you know, they follow the procession. I don't know. I think they're afraid somebody will steal the silver handles off the coffins or something. But the second policeman had come along. So forth. I was laughing. This cop looked at me. Well, all of a sudden it occurred to me that These people were indulging in a very nice rite, but they were missing the whole show. Well, I drove on down the street, and the colors had turned up, way up above what they'd been before. Just on the realization, as what do you go along through life being afraid of? Well, you go along through life being afraid of dying. Well, why do you go along through life being afraid of dying? That's silly. Take any person here tonight and run a past death on them, and they'll say, oh, how did I get back here? My, I was a sweet girl. Yes, my family loved me very much. Or the idea of being killed in such a fashion, it's outrageous. It's a disgrace. Makes me feel awfully unimportant. Well, it sort of changes your viewpoint. You aren't going to talk on reincarnation. Also on transmigration. The Egyptians thought that individual who didn't mind his P's and Q's became a bug and maybe transmigrated off into some other species and finally worked back up into being a human again. Don't know why he wanted to work to that level, but he did. They thought this was the way life ran. Reincarnation. This idea is an old one. This idea I know is at least 3,500 years old. The idea of reincarnation. They kept talking about reincarnation, reincarnation, reincarnation. And then people have brought reincarnation into disgrace by insisting on being Julius or Knapp or Cicero or Bach or Mozart and so forth. Of course, you know the funny part of it is that these gentlemen are all around. I mean, they're still with us someplace. Also, there seems to be that when you get a big personality along the line someplace, it shatters. And it gets onto a lot of fatal lines. Or it even seems to start fatal lines sometimes. Boy, you talk about unknowns. Well, all of a sudden, you run into the phenomena of reincarnation. Nobody's ever had this before. The phenomena. It isn't just an idea. And you can demonstrate it to your own satisfaction. And from individual to individual, it doesn't go along as a lot of hallucination. It goes along according to a natural set of natural laws. It becomes very fascinating. Doesn't mean the ancients were right, but it sure means that I was bewildered. Now, when you've got life laid out on such a fashion, one's values have a tendency to change. Now, I don't know how much a knowledge of this would change this particular subject tonight, dead man's goals. I don't know how much it would change it. But there is such a tremendous desire on the part of a living organism to keep other organisms alive, to help, to alleviate the pain in the world, to shoulder the burdens of all God's creation, that an individual gets pretty scrambled up on his theta line. If you want to straighten this theta line out, you have to know something about this phenomenon. Now, a fellow dies, for some reason or other, his friend goes into his valence. Well, now, don't think for a moment that his friend does not continue to live his own life. He does. He lives his own life plus the dead man's life, which makes his own life kind of complicated sometimes. And as far as I can tell at this time, it doesn't do a bit of good to do this. People just do it. Dog dies. 15 years later, you find the dog's mistress, now a grown young lady, being cute at parties. Please. She's carrying that dog's life along with her. Well, if you ever wanted any substantiation of the validity of the concept of the eight dynamics, Believe me, it is contained in this Dead Man's Goals. This life continuum theory. Let's be much more technical and proper. Life continuum theory. Anybody else think of a big word to throw in there? Make it complex so that the professors will appreciate it. Anyway, here's Grandpa and Grandma and so on. When these people are alive, they have a certain influence upon the preacher. But when they're dead, the preclear keeps on trying to live their lives for them. Well, we all know the phenomena of one human being trying to live another human being's life for him. Now, Willie, you'll have to go to school, and you better do this, and I want you to get good grades. And, you know, I never had an opportunity like this when I was a boy. And you'd better engage in this kind of a business, and you better do this and go here and go there. There's that kind of living one's life. But there's this other fabulously noble, heroic picking up of the burdens, the theta burdens, not the responsibilities, just the theta burdens of this dead person and going on with him. I'm not quite sure, but what at the basic assessment that psychosomatics are not broadly out of this mechanism. I check back on a few cases and I find an individual who was very, very worried that he was going to go insane. Or we check out in his family and we find out that his grandmother had gone insane. Well, this would make it look, according to your present-day evaluation, all men are dogs, that's the present-day evaluation. Communists say they're slaves, and go on to prove it. You'd say, well, this person is just unduly worried because he's heard of heredity. That's not the way the mechanism works. Unless you know this other mechanism, you're not going to solve that worry. You're not going to take that worry away from this guy. Why? Of his own free, open-hearted will, he is carrying on his grandmother's worry about being insane. He just reached out and picked it up. You know, it'd be an awful joke on the human race to find out at this late date that it actually was as noble as that. That all that gets wrong with anybody is trying to make everybody go on living. The fact that we consider it quite heroic for a man to lay down his life on the third dynamic, we play that up a great deal in our stories. A lot of other data around. If you want to solve or get some sort of an investigation going in a case, you'll find that practically everything that's wrong with this case, or everything this case is really trying to do that this case doesn't want to do, is on account of somebody who's dead or is at least out of the running and no longer in circulation. You can assess the thing out that way. Yes, you can knock it out with engrams, but it's a funny part of it. You don't find all the engrams on a case when you're starting. You get all the engrams you can lay your hands on, and that's all you can get. And the person feels much better, and life is running along fine. Only you didn't take away that one particular phobia. You can't quite understand why you were never able to get the idea of why this person had to sit down to the dinner table and go like this. Dog. It's a dead dog someplace on the case, that's all. Why an individual has this very bad back, sway back. He feels sway back. He'll tell you that he's sway back. So forth. We go back and we don't find anything one way or the other. Well, all of a sudden, in his youth, we run into him standing on a street corner looking at a sway backed horse. and thinking, isn't it terrible? That swayback horse has to carry a man in the saddle. It's probably going to break his back. So he picks it up and carries it for the horse.
I don't know that this does the horse any good.
But I know that men do it. Now, polio case was in here the other day. Little girl from Indiana. She's standing by herself. She's been an immobile case, bed case, and so forth. Probably take 2 or 3 months for her muscle tissue to build back to a point where she'll be able to walk and be as active as a child of 14 should be. This girl is well. A little minor miracle. Well, what do we find at the bottom of this case? According to the auditor's report on the thing, we find... saw another little kid, and the other little kid had polio, and she felt sorry for the other little kid, so she went home and got polio. That was the start of it. And there she is in bed for how many years? Bedridden. Sympathy
with this other person, so forth.
Now one can add it up and say, well, the reason human beings do this, very simple, is because they want sympathy. They'll do anything to get sympathy. I'm afraid that's just somebody's 1/5 n-gram talking. Silly. Of course, an individual does discover there are times in his life when he is dependent upon other people. But one of the surest ways in the world you can get yourself in trouble is to help somebody. Just for a moment there, think of somebody you have tried to help. Now, you didn't ask for gratitude. You didn't ask for anything. But sooner or later, you got... what Shakespeare say about the wintry winds and fangs of ingratitude or something of the sort. But an individual who helps somebody else to get gratitude, according to an old Chinese proverb, that person who has mentioned that he has helped somebody else twice has been amply rewarded. And that's all a pay the wrist, because the individual's going to resent it. Parental-child relationships are sour, really, only for one good reason. And that is because the child cannot contribute equally to the parental contribution. This demonstrates the child to be much less powerful than the parents. It makes him, puts him in a bad way. He goes out, build up some of his own potential. Maybe that's why he carries on dead men's goals. But he does. He goes out and he sees some pitiful sight in the world and he's all triggered. He says, why? That's too bad. He picks it up, presses it to his bosom. He's sick. Then people come around and give him sympathy, and it gets awful complicated. But the purity of the nobility of that gesture is unquestioned. There is nothing but an altruistic computation behind it. You can investigate it if you want to. You won't find the person saying, now let's see, if I get sick like Bessie is, why, my parents will have to be nice to me. Or you'll find the kid occasionally going around saying, well, when I die, boy, are they going to regret it. You're going to feel sorry for me. You're going to find that. But you're going to find this child merely being spontaneous about the thing, saying, it's too bad. I'll take it on. The child evidently, or the human being evidently, at the time he does this, feels well and strong and able to support these things. And it's only later, when he himself is staggering under his own burdens and all the other burdens of the world, that he begins to fold up under this. And he wants to get rid of some of these burdens. But what burdens will he get rid of? He'll get rid of his own. He won't give up the other person's. What are we, a flock of saints? That's the way it works. Now, you try to spring a psychosomatic off somebody who is carrying it for somebody else who is dead, you're going to have a little fight in your hands. And you're not going to solve it by fighting about it. You're going to solve it by getting the first time he felt sympathy for this other person or for this condition. The first time he felt sympathy for the condition. You get the first time he felt sympathy for the condition, then you can unlock the chain. But not otherwise. He'll hold on to his own integrity on that much more solidly than his integrity to himself. Very peculiar race that we live in. This mount of nobility, sainthood, and altruism were actually let alone why this race would probably go along at a heck of a rate. But I think people have been so busy being altruistic that they raise hell with each other. Oh, so you won't let me help you, huh? Fix you. And by the way, that's about the fastest way you can get into a fight. You go out and find some marital group where the husband or the wife is fighting continually and take the most combative and punitive partner aside. Have a little talk with him. You say, well, now, Joe, what's wrong? Well, see, rah-rah, a lot of accusations, yaggity-yaggity-yaggity-yaggity. Yeah, but when did this start? Well, it started pretty young, a long time ago, when we first got married. What are you trying to do for this woman? Well, that's just it. I wanted to help her do this. I wanted to get her that. I wanted to try to get this other kind of a position so that she could do this and that, and she won't listen to it. She doesn't think it's worthwhile. She doesn't think it's this way, and she doesn't think it's that way. He'll cover it up by interlarding it with the fact, and she keeps saying, I'm stingy, and I'll show her I'm not stingy, and so on. It's all tangled up, but the middle strand of it is she won't let me help her. She won't let me contribute. Even contribution is really an improper word. She won't let me help her. You ask her, if she's in apathy, well, I can't help him. I realize that I can't. And if you go into it very deeply, you take people who are known in the neighborhood as being the most reprehensible. Gadabouts, drunks, treat their kids bad. Bad reputation these people have. And you get them aside and you shake down the problem, not with any suggestion to them at all. You'll find out that their basic difficulty is they can't help each other enough. It's a funny race we live in, isn't it? Or somebody will bring me a Coke, we'll take a break.